Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, January 25th, 2024. Presidio County officials hope to boost economy through Marfa Airport improvements. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. At Wednesday's meeting, the Presidio County Commissioner's Court discussed potential improvements to the Marfa Airport. Precinct 4 Commissioner David Beebe presented updates with Airport Director Chase Snodgrass that they hope will improve the functionality and safety of the facilities and potentially pull in a little cash. The court first discussed updating the county's land lease policy to reflect new language in leases offered to hangar owners. The topic might sound to most like a dry housekeeping item, but Beebe explained that the airport's policies have been a very touchy subject for years. He said that tensions had flared in Commissioner's Court 8 years ago when Loretto Vasquez held his seat. Local pilots and hangar owners were fired up because the county had been following a standard Federal Aviation Association guideline requiring that any structures left behind at the end of a lease become the property of the county. The amount of protest at that meeting was severe, Beebe said. As of January 2024, the county's official policy now no longer requires that structures at the airport become county property after leases end, and the county does not discriminate when it comes to allowing hangar owners to lease or sublease their buildings to others. We want people to have their hangars and to be using their hangars, Beebe said. If anything, this county is maintaining too many buildings that we're not using. Per TxDOT figures, there are 30 based aircraft at the Marfa Airport. Despite its relatively small size, the airport is for the most part a self-sustaining entity. Its chief source of revenue is fuel sales, not the leasing or sale of land. We're a model of how other towns of this size should be doing it, Snodgrass said. He said that shifts in Marfa Airport policy were contentious because of the airport's history. It was originally an Army airfield that was then donated to the county after World War II. For decades, it was self-governed by a board of local pilots. People went and built structures. There were no rules, he said. Trying to transition from that to very stringent rules today requires a slow, steady process that everyone can see. County Judge Joe Portillo raised an important question in Marfa's hot real estate market. Is there anything in the lease that expressly prohibits people from living in their hangars? Snodgrass explained that, technically speaking, the lease does not, though FAA regulations prohibit hangars from being used for general storage, workshops, or for anything other than a place to park and shield an aircraft from the elements. Despite the gray area, he said that he had had very few problems with tenants misusing their structures. Next, county officials discussed how to use a quickly expiring pot of money. The Marfa Airport has an accumulation of state and federal grant funding of around $1.6 million left over from as far back as FY 2021. If the funds are not committed to a project this upcoming year, they will no longer be available for use. Snodgrass said his proposed top priority went to improving the existing taxiway. For most local pilots, It's long enough to comfortably maneuver, but for the larger private jets that land in Marfa for busy event weekends, it requires a series of sharp turns to navigate. Bibi agreed, pointing out that it wasn't in the airport's best interest for million-dollar customers to feel wary of touching down in Marfa. It's bad for business, he said. Photo by Don Burgess, courtesy of the Don Burgess Collection, Archives of the Big Bend, Sol Ross State University. The life's work of linguist and photographer Don Burgess, who helped document and preserve the language of the Tarahumara people of Chihuahua, Mexico, including books, manuscripts, and photographs, was recently donated to the archives of the Big Bend in order to be preserved for future generations. Water in the Desert Conference Springboards Rio Grande Research Center Revival by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. Far West Texas was the center of the water world last week as legislators, landowners, and researchers from across the state gathered for the first ever Water in the Desert Conference held at Sol Ross State University. Around 265 attendees gathered for the 3-day conference, organized by local entities, including the Borderlands Research Institute, BRI, Dixon Water Foundation, and Rio Grande Joint Venture, as well as statewide nonprofits Environmental Defense Fund, the Texas Water Foundation, and more. The gathering focused primarily on Chihuahuan Desert hydrology and featured panels on groundwater management, water policy at the Texas Legislature, and land stewardship. It also promoted Sol Ross University's Rio Grande Research Center, RGRC, a 15-year-old water resources department that is currently undergoing an institutional revamp. Alpine native Adeline Fox, a water communications professional now living in Central Texas, who sat on the event's planning committee, said one of the goals of the conference was to bring awareness to Far West Texas water issues and to make the RGRC more of a hub for research in the area. This is the start of that conversation, to really amplify the work that's being done there and then also increase the knowledge so that more students will come to Sol Ross and want to study water, Fox said. As it stands now, the center only has one employee, its director, Professor Kevin Urbanchik, and initial funds from Congress and the USDA have long since dried up. This year, Urbanchik intends to give the center a renewed focus, possibly a new name and stronger financial legs to stand on. Urbanchik said the Water in the Desert Conference helped expose the RGRC to potential funders that may be interested in supporting research efforts in the region. I'm hoping that with this momentum we can get the center moving, Urbanchik said. We have to get funding coming our way. That's really key. An influx of funds will help support additional center staff as well as more research, education, and outreach initiatives. Urbanchik is still in the process of shaping the newly revived center with university administrators. There is a possibility that the center could be expanded to include natural sciences other than water, like biology, chemistry, physics, and paleontology. Urbanchik said he wants the RGRC to have the synergy of a full-fledged permanent center with public newsletters, exciting research projects for undergraduate and graduate students, and community services, similar to what the Borderlands Research Institute has achieved. The BRI model, they've done such a good job with that, said Urbanchik. And there's room for another one, or so the administration thinks. Projects he has kept afloat at the center include efforts to manage water level data for the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District and to monitor a springs system in the Lower Canyons of Big Bend National Park. The Lower Canyons Springs system, which can only be accessed via an eight-day canoe trip, is little known, said Urbanchik, but provides vital to the flow into the Rio Grande River, pumping on average 250 cubic feet per second. That research at the center will continue, he said, and could also be accompanied by water quality testing and further investigations into the understudied igneous aquifer, which stretches across to most of the Big Bend region. The desire for more research locally comes at a time where Texas water issues, problematic disposal wells in the Permian Basin, aging infrastructure, drought, the decline of springs are coming to the forefront. The most recent legislative session resulted in the creation of the Texas Water Caucus, a new group dedicated to water policy, as well as the Texas Water Fund, a $1 billion investment in water projects that passed with 77% of the public vote. Senator Charles Perry, chair of the Senate Committee on Water, Agriculture, and Rural Affairs, Representative Tracy King, chair of the House Natural Resources Committee, and Senator Cesar Blanco sat on a panel about water policy at the Texas Legislature at last week's water conference in Alpine. State leaders agreed the $1 billion investment was just a drop in the bucket and discussed the need for a more sustainable water infrastructure funding source, similar to continual funding TxDOT receives for road and bridge maintenance. Water's not sexy. It's long-term and it's expensive, said Perry. Legislators frankly discussed a potential reality in which water is less affordable and less available, one that could be remedied with the help of new technologies and conservation efforts. The treatment and reuse of produced water, a fossil fuel extraction byproduct, and need for more desalination plants were brought up as potential solutions. The management of local groundwater resources, the Chihuahuan Desert's only water supply, was the topic of a panel involving Brewster, Presidio, Jeff Davis, and Reeves County Groundwater Conservation Districts, GCDs. While the districts vary in regards to origin and funding model, all agreed there are regional data gaps regarding groundwater availability. The Texas Water Development Board, TWDB, has been monitoring water levels in the area since the 1970s, but its reach is limited, determined by landowners' willingness to provide access to the wells on their properties. While some GCDs in the state have enough money to hire field technicians to monitor water levels, many in the Tri-County area are running on small budgets, ranging from $50,000 to $90,000, with few resources compared to their massive jurisdictions. Urbanchik, who serves on the Brewster County GCD, likened their district to a leaky ship. Commercial users in the county, which are by law required to obtain a permit from the GCD and report levels of water usage, are going unchecked. There's only 5 permitted commercial users of water, and there have to be 100 actual users of water that should be permitted, Urbanchik said. Aquifers underneath South Brewster County and Big Bend National Park, including the Santa Elena Aquifer, are not yet mapped by the TWDB, and little is known about the Marathon Aquifer. Urbanchik said groundwater availability models developed by the TWDB of the Marathon Aquifer are only conceptual due to the fact that the agency was unable to gain enough land access. that's really one of the biggest problems for the igneous, too. We just don't have enough information, Urbanchik said. We don't have enough monitoring occurring at strategic locations. Fox said the need for more groundwater data and greater landowner cooperation was a big takeaway from the conference. She said there are often misconceptions from landowners that the water level data will be misused, when in reality it helps scientists understand more about a vital resource everyone relies on. There needs to be, and the districts understand this, more collaboration with those private landowners to basically communicate the benefit of having this data without making it fearful, without making it scary, said Fox. We have your data for good, to use it to help us better understand the region. Clay Miller of C.E. Miller Ranch in Jeff Davis County participated in a West Texas landowner panel in which he and others discussed the need for greater landowner involvement and commitment to conservation. I think the challenge, really, where water is concerned, is to try and get away from, well, I'm not going to be around, what do I care, Miller said. I think it's important for us as stewards of land and water to think about the future. A recap of the Water in the Desert conference from Our Water Matters columnist Trey Gerfers can be found in the opinion section of this week's Big Bend Sentinel. For more information, visit bri.selross.edu/events/water-in-the-desert-2024/. Photo by Scott Del Vecchio. Senator Cesar Blanco and Senator Charles Perry participate in a water policy at the Texas Legislature panel at last week's Water in the Desert conference at Sol Ross State University. Feedback sought for area road transportation improvements. Tri-County. Texas Department of Transportation planners are seeking input on $244 million in projects to be officially included in the El Paso District's Rural Improvement Program, Rural TIP, and a virtual presentation and local meetings will be held next week to discuss 59 roadway-related projects proposed by the agency for 2025 through 2028. Past rural TIP projects for the Tri-County area primarily focused on highway rehabilitation, like sealing and coating, but the improvements can cover anything transportation-related, including sidewalks, bike lanes, pavement repair, improved signals, bridges, safety improvements, and turning lanes. Rural TIP is a short-range program developed by the El Paso TxDOT District in cooperation with rural planning organizations that covers a 4-year period and contains a prioritized listing of all projects proposed for federal funding. The Rural TIP is a primary component of the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, STIP, that will incorporate funding for projects in rural and urban portions of the El Paso District. Transportation projects cannot receive federal funding unless they are included in the Rural TIP. The TxDOT El Paso District Planning and Programming Territory is about 21,700 square miles, covering 6 counties: Brewster, Culberson, El Paso, Hudspeth, Jeff Davis, and Presidio. Our district is larger than 9 states, and road use varies by county, said El Paso District Engineer Tomas Trevino. It is important for residents to review program information and let us know what is important to them. Attendees will have 2 options to participate in the public meeting, learn more about projects, and provide feedback. Virtual and in-person options will present the same information. The virtual public meeting is not a live event, and a presentation and materials will be posted on the web by 4 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, January 30th. Go to www.txdot.gov, search Meetings, and select El Paso. In-person options will be in an open house format and will be held in Van Horn, Alpine, and Presidio. Tuesday, January 30th, 2024, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Van Horn, El Capitan Hotel, 100 East Broadway, Van Horn, Texas, 79855. Wednesday, January 31st, 2024, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Alpine, Alpine Civic Center, 801 West Holland Avenue, Alpine, Texas, 79830. Thursday, February 1st, 2024, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Presidio, Presidio Activity Center, 1200 East O'Reilly Street, Presidio, Texas, 79845. Comments must be postmarked or otherwise received by Friday, February 16th, 2024. For more information, visit the TxDOT program page online. 2025-2028 Rural Transportation Improvement Program, El Paso District. www.txdot.gov, search Meetings, and select El Paso.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, January 25th, 2024. School board discusses possible ag barn location, honors top students. After approving construction of a new agricultural sciences barn in December, the Fort Stockton School District Monday night discussed the possible location of the project, and it will involve discussion by the city council. The board wants to build the barn adjacent to the high school, but city code involving livestock will require involving the city council. I asked Mr. Madrid, why is our ag barn so far away? Superintendent Zamora said, adding that he was told it was because of city code. However, at the time we hadn't passed the bond, we weren't in a position to ask, can we build something new, and now we are. So I called Mr. Rodriguez from the city and said, look, we believe that we might be better served having our ag barn somewhere closer to the high school. Zamora said the district was looking at the area where the school holds the homecoming bonfire, or the area east of the softball fields, which would provide students easier access from the school. I talked to some of the other board members and different people in the community who liked the idea, adding that Rodriguez thought the city could accommodate them because it's far enough away and there can be exemptions made if the city council approves. The first place to start is a letter of intent asking the city if they would grant us permission to look at one of those spots out there. And if so, we've already kind of told us that we can have something built, ag barn, as early as summer. The board voted unanimously to have Zamora draft the letter of intent. The board approved donations from GM in the amount of $7,500 for athletics and $10,000 for the band program, and from the Lee High School Boys Basketball Booster Club in the amount of $500 for participation in a tournament. The board approved the order of election for two school board trustee posts up for election this year. The application deadline for Ward 4 and Ward 6 election is Friday, February 16th at 5 p.m. Applications can be brought to the district office at 101 West Division Street or mailed to Fort Stockton or mailed to West Division Street, Fort Stockton, Texas 79735. Applications can be emailed to Ember Renteria at ember.renteria@fsisd.net. The board recognized the January Students of the Month, presenting each with a certificate in honor of their outstanding achievements. The Apache Elementary School Student of the Month is Christian Pena, who Principal Juan Saldana said is a remarkable pre-K student who has an impressive grasp of all letters, sounds, and numbers. Saldana added that Christian is eager to help his fellow students in the classroom, showcasing both empathy and a collaborative spirit. The Alamo Elementary School Student of the Month is Zayden Mata, who, as teacher said, is the model student everybody dreams of, with a positive attitude every day. For Stockton Intermediate School Student of the Month is fourth grader Aresley Gonzalez, who was described as a very determined student who works best under pressure and wants the best for herself and her fellow students. For Stockton Middle School Student of the Month is Traden Marquez, who Principal Sammy Solis said is being recognized for his leadership, academics, and character. Every one of the teachers said that he was very respectful, hardworking, and never complained about assignments, instruction, and his learning. For Stockton High School Student of the Month is Senior Amaya Urias, who Principal Dr. Kenneth Vogel said is one of the most outstanding student athletes and student leaders he's ever seen in his career as a high school administrator. I've even called her the face of Fort Stockton High School because she has been so often photographed and featured in newspapers and social media. Fort Stockton Police Chief gives final 2023 police stats. Police Chief Ernesto Velasquez presented the final statistics at the January 22nd City Council meeting. Chief noted that 8 people were arrested inside the city for smuggling of persons, and Mayor Paul Casillas asked what that was. Smuggling of persons is like when somebody's operating a vehicle and they're going down to pick up either undocumented persons or and smuggling across anywhere through the county or anywhere through the city and going across the state. Darren Hodges asked if there were any wrecker complaints in December, and Velasquez replied, not anymore. Following the chief's report, the council approved resolution number 24-103R, authorizing the city to file a grant of application for community surveillance to combat terrorism. This is a Homeland Security grant to combat terrorism. Basically, we're looking to apply for a drone program to help prevent and deter acts of terrorism across the state and also gather intelligence and also use it as a surveillance platform to share information and respond accurately and timely to any type of event, active shooter event, any type of active terrorism event. If there's any such event, the police could deploy the drone and get there, get eyes on for suspicious people, persons, or any act of terrorism. The council approved a memorandum of understanding between PermiaCare Rural Border Intervention Program, Community Health Worker Services, and the Fort Stockton Police Department for collaborative treatment planning and care coordination activities concerning community-based mental health and or substance abuse disorder services. The council voted to table discussion on the amended and restated economic development program agreement between the city and Lancium. Pecos County Commissioners earlier Monday amended their tax abatement agreement with Lancium due to delays in building their 300-megawatt station. The company wanted to do the same with the city, which also provided tax incentives. We had an agreement proposed to present to you. However, this afternoon it was brought to our attention how taking $30 million and putting it back into the effective tax roll would affect the tax rate, said Economic Development Director Ramos. So in the best interest of having all information gathered and presenting a complete and concise agreement, I asked the City Council just to table this item and we'll revisit it when we look at it further. The Council approved pay application number 2, totaling over $5,000 for work performed by Triple R Welding, which includes the completion of services for the covered parking for Public Works Machinery and Equipment Construction Project. County amends economic development agreement with Lancia. Ongoing delays with the Electric Reliability Council of Texas has forced the Pecos County Commissioner's Court to amend its Economic Development Program agreement with Lancium for a 300-megawatt substation and data center northwest of Fort Stockton. The county entered into the agreement in September 2021 and provides tax incentives to Lancium, which invested $30 million into the project. The company operates a 25-megawatt substation, but ERCOT won't allow Lancium to bring the 300-megawatt substation online. With the issue of ERCOT not being able to energize the 300-megawatt substation that Lancium has already built, they are unable to build the additional 300-megawatt data center, said Director Ramey Ramos. What we're asking for today to do for the agreement provided for you is to continue the abatement and the percentages on the 25-megawatt data center that is complete and done, and then take the 30-megawatt substation completely out, put it on the standard tax roll, and they would continue to pay the standard tax rate until the time they can energize it. In other action, the court accepted the lease agreement between Pecos County and Board of Regents of the Texas A&M University System, approved October 10th, for four office spaces in the amount of $1,500 a month. They approved for Southwest security alarms for upgrade installations to cellular internet for the public library security and fire alarm system at a cost of $460. They approved a lease and services agreement between the library and Apertex Corporation due to Southwest Security Alarm Systems transitioning to Apertex Corporation at the cost of $157 per month. They authorized Precinct 3 to administer and sign all documents pertaining to Texas Park and Wildlife for the Ira and Pecos River Project. The project will improve river access across the park, expanding angling and paddling access, restoring aquatic and bank habitat, improve water quality and flow, and provide a nexus for local outreach and education. The contract expires August 31, 2025. The court approved a request from City of Fort Stockton to cut Valenzuela Street in Precinct 4 to install a 4-inch sewer line. Approved a request from Pecos County Water Control and Improvement District 1 to cut Water Street in Precinct 4 to install a 2-inch water tap. The council called for bids for 10,000 tons or more or less of crushed aggregate to Fort Stockton, Iran, Imperial, Cuyahnosa, Highway 2023, Harrell Road, and Puckett Road. Bids are due February 14th and will be awarded February 26th. They called for bids for 100,000 gallons of emulsion, 100,000 gallons of emulsion, and another 100,000 gallons of emulsion. Bids due February 14th at 4 p.m. and will be awarded February 26th. Colin Bibb and Brian Carrico of Byways Hospitality announced the acquisition of three historic hotels by Four Yucca LP, a new group of Texas investors that will be implementing restoration in Alpine and Fort Davis. Charles Mallory, the previous owner, will remain as a partner in the next phase. Bibb and Carrico previously told of their plan to restore three iconic properties in the Big Bend region, the Holland Hotel and the Maverick Inn in Alpine and the Hotel Olympia in Fort Davis. The new group has begun the process of detailed design and pre-construction activities and intends to begin selective demolition on non-public portions of the hotels in the coming weeks. We appreciate the support of local community and are working as diligently as possible to navigate the process of historic reviews and approvals, Carrico said. As part of that process, the Century Bar and Grill will be closed starting January 16th, but may open from time to time for community events to be announced through social media. The Century will host an event to celebrate the Alpine community on Saturday, January 20th, 7 p.m., featuring the Swifts. The Blue Mountain Bar and Grill in Fort Davis will continue to remain open. The Big Bend communities of Alpine and Fort Davis are so special, and we hope to revive these hotels into gathering places that residents can be proud of. We've assembled an amazing team to execute the visions from architecture all the way down to food and beverage. The team includes Alexa Management, a hospitality management company focused on boutique hotel projects in Texas, and Baldridge Architects, a nationally renowned firm with deep experience in historic preservation. Others include Giles Design, who designed the interiors and branding for the Hotel Emma in San Antonio, restaurateurs Morgan Weber and Vincent Hyun, who created Marfa Spirit Company, Gypsy Sally's in Leakey, Texas, and Cultivera in Houston, as well as graphic designer Cody Haltom. Byways Hospitality has also contracted Post Oak Preservation to oversee the hotel's designation as historic landmarks and to ensure the original architecture is preserved and renovated accurately. Plans include a restored lobby bar, ballroom, and restaurant in the Holland, an expanded courtyard pool and restaurant at the Olympia, and an outdoor-focused offering on the Maverick with 20 additional rooms behind the existing hotel. Bibb and Carrico also plan to update the furniture, fixtures, and equipment so the 100-year-old hotels can continue to serve guests and surrounding community for the next century. Bibb and Carrico founded Byways Hospitality to focus on preserving the places that shaped the American West while thoughtfully building the future of hospitality. Their experience spans venture-backed startups, private equity, and hospitality development and management. Bibb, who has been a frequent site in Alpine, said they intend to hire locally and are working on solutions for employee housing as part of the deal. ABA President Jim Street said the project will have a big impact on a program it is working on to restore much of the business lost in the recent COVID-19 pandemic. Museum of the Big Bend to host Nick Hurt in free show February 2nd. The Museum of the Big Bend of the Sol Ross State University campus in Alpine is thrilled to present an unforgettable evening with guitarist and filmmaker Nick Hurt on Friday, February 2. This special presentation will feature a guitar recital by Hurt, followed by a screening of his film, Serenade, I Miss You. There is no charge for the community to join this extraordinary event at the Cultural Events Center in the new Emmett and Miriam McCoy building. The doors will open at 5, while the show runs from 6 to 7:30. Hurt, a guitarist and instructor of music at Sol Ross State, embarked on a creative journey in early 2021 by commissioning new guitar works from several Austin-based guitarists, including Zeke Jarman, a musician rights advocate and member of the band Batty Jr., Justice Phillips, composer and administrator for Austin Classical Guitar, and Claire Puckett, songwriter and member of the bands Mother Falcon and Hikes. Serenade, I Miss You features performances of these new works for guitar, as well as insights, humor, and philosophy from the composers themselves. The film premiered April 8th at Austin Classical Guitar's venue, The Rosette. It is an honest and intimate portrayal of four young musicians, creative inspirations, said Matthew Hensley, director of Austin Classical Guitar. This is the movie all musicians wish would be made about musicians, giving insight into the craft and voice to the hopes behind the performances everyone sees on stage. We are delighted to host Nick and share this unique fusion of live music and cinematic art with our community. It's an opportunity to experience multiple layers of the creative process, said Museum Director Mary Bones. Borderlands Research Institute, Visit Alpine, team up for the first ever Wildlife Day on February 3rd. Wildlife Day in Alpine, a brand new partnership between the Borderlands Research Institute at Saul Ross and Visit Alpine is scheduled for Saturday, February 3rd. Wildlife Day in Alpine is an opportunity to celebrate and learn about the creatures with whom we share the beautiful desert mountain landscape of the Big Bend region, with a full day of free activities starting at 9. A guided hike on Hancock Hill and a guided birding excursion near Alpine Creek at Coconut Lodge and Park are reservation only and have limited space available. At noon, learn about current wildlife research projects at a BRI lunch and learn event in the lobby of the historic Holland Hotel. In the afternoon, several downtown Alpine shops will offer wildlife-themed events and specials, including Front Street Books, in-person wildlife cartooning and comic book signing, Gallery on the Square, wildlife conservation art, Javelinas on Holland, music, wildlife t-shirts, plushies, and more, Wasserman's Visit with Carl the Camel. In the evening, the Granada Theater will host a special screening of Deep in the Heart, a visually stunning documentary narrated by Matthew McConaughey, celebrating Texas wildlife diversity and natural landscapes. The film will be followed by a wildlife panel discussion with BRI experts on several subjects, including the current status of black bear populations in the Trans-Pecos and beyond.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, January 18th. Inmate at Ward County Jail dies after medical emergency. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. An inmate at the Ward County Jail died last Wednesday after suffering a medical emergency. According to Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle, 53-year-old Michael Allen Richards of Monahans suffered a medical emergency at approximately 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday, January 10th, while incarcerated at the jail. Correctional officers called for EMS, which took Richards to Ward Memorial Hospital. Richards was pronounced deceased at approximately 1:33 p.m. Quote, "The Texas Rangers were notified of this death and conducted an investigation into the death. Autopsy was ordered, and investigation continues by the Texas Rangers," Valle said. Richards had been in custody at the jail since August 4th on a charge of failing to register annually as a sex offender. Richards was being held on a $15,000 bond. School Board tables extending superintendent's contract. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD Board of Trustees met Monday evening to address a list of agenda items, 10 of which were covered in public open meeting, while 3 items were left to cover in closed session. These were items covering personnel hiring, resignations, and approving the extension of the superintendent's contract for the 2025-2026 year. After the board reconvened into open session at the end of the meeting, Gay Fisher, superintendent of schools secretary, said, quote, "No decisions were made in closed session. Upon return to the open meeting, there were no personnel changes or additions. Regarding agenda item 13, consider superintendent's 25-26 contract, it was tabled until all board members could be present," end quote. Current superintendent of schools, Chad Smith, is under contract through January 2025. It wasn't clear as of press time when the board will address extending Smith's contract. In other matters, the MHS cheer team and the MHS choir received special recognition for advancing past district competition by becoming state qualifiers. Next, the trustees considered and approved the election of Vicki Heflin, Camilla Blum, Steve Tuxhorn, Nancy Upchurch, and Criselda Corda to serve as the Ward County Appraisal District Board of Directors for the 2024 year. In board recognition, Smith presented plaques to each of the board members in recognition of their years of service. Smith then gave the enrollment report, quote, "The enrollment numbers have stayed steady. We are at 2,201 total enrollment up to December 30th, 2023, he said. Business manager Katie Jones presented the monthly financial report and disbursements to the board. Included in this report was the monthly statement of account maintenance and operation, which showed a December beginning balance of $30,981,000, total deposits of $4,475,000, total withdrawals for $1,700,000, total interest of $147,000, ending balance for December 31st, 2023, totaling $33,904,000 and showing an average balance of $32,572,000. A bond update athletic projects change order was presented to the board for approval. The change order was to replace an existing cast iron sewer below slab with PVC and fittings at the South Field House. Also, the change order covers adding epoxy flooring in all locker rooms and hallways in the South Field House. The original contract sum was $18,611,000, and the new contract sum will be $18,688,000, making a difference of $76,700. Also presented to the board was an update on the bond financial report, which shows a December beginning balance of $140 million with expenditures of $126 million, with interest earned in the amount of $3 million for a December 31, 2023 ending balance of proceeds available for $16,912,000. Rocky Reeves was at the meeting to present the required annual audit findings, which were good, and to approve Smith and Reeves to continue as the financial auditors for the 2024 fiscal year. Present at the Monday meeting were Board Trustees Josh Schwab, Board President Donna Garcia, Steve Tuxhorn, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. Bobby Almanza and Raymond Reyes were absent from the meeting. The MWP-ISD school board meetings are held on the third Monday of each month, unless otherwise specified, at 6:30 p.m. at the Administration Building Boardroom, located at 606 South Betty. Any individual who has a concern or question can request to be placed on the board meeting agenda. Anyone interested in addressing the Board of Trustees needs to pick up a registration form from the administration office. Individuals may only address issues which are listed on the agenda, which is posted 72 hours before the meeting date. They must be registered to speak by 12 noon on the day of the meeting and will have 4 minutes to speak. The public is encouraged to become involved in affairs concerning our students. School board election set for May 4th. District 6 and 7 up for re-election. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. 2024 will see two Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD school board trustee districts up for re-election. Josh Schwab in District 7 and Nancy Upchurch in District 6. Filing begins on January 17th and ends on February 16th. Upchurch has been in office 9 years, and as of Wednesday morning, Upchurch filed her intent for re-election. Schwab has represented District 7 for 2 years, and as of press time, phone calls to Schwab went unanswered as to whether he will seek re-election. School board elections are held every 2 years. Election day has been set for May 4th at the MWP-ISD Administration Building at 606 South Betty from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting will begin April 22nd and conclude on April 30th, also at the MWP ISD Administration Building. Applications for ballot by mail should be mailed or emailed to the MWP ISD Administration Building, 606 South Betty Street, or emailed to jbailey@mwpisd.esc18.net. The last day to apply for ballot by mail must be received by Tuesday, April 23rd by 5 p.m. According to the Texas Association of School Boards, the qualifications to run for a school board trustee position say a person must be a United States citizen, a registered voter, a resident of Texas for at least the preceding 12 months, and a resident of the district in which they wish to run in for a minimum of 6 months prior to filing deadline. A candidate cannot have any felony convictions nor be deemed totally or partially mentally incapacitated by a court of law. Coffey retires after 30 years at CCFU. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Longtime Monahans resident Debbie Coffey recently retired after 30 years with Complex Community Federal Credit Union. Debbie, born to Glenn and Billy Ply and sister to Randy, graduated from Monahans High School in 1976. While in MHS, Debbie was an active Pep Squad member. She was also a member of MHS Choir under longtime choir director Ken Mills. Debbie married 3 months after graduation and moved to Seminole. Quote, "I went to work at the library, and my son, Scott, was born while we lived in Seminole," she said. Debbie lived in Seminole for 4 years before she and son Scott moved back to Monahans. After coming back home in 1980, Debbie went to work for Dr. Longbotham, who was the dentist in Monahans at the time. Debbie worked for Dr. Longbotham for 3 years, during which time she met and married Daryl Coffey. Debbie and Daryl met during the time both were working at Memco Pipe. The couple got married in 1982, and daughter Stephanie was born in 1984. Quote, "I became a stay-at-home mom for the next 8 years," Debbie said. When she did go back to work in 1993, it was for Wicket Gulf Employee Federal Credit Union. Quote, "It was a two-person office, the manager and me," she laughed, "and I did a lot of paperwork and took payments for our loans," end quote. The Wicket Gulf Oil Employee Credit Union was in a small building next to the Wicket Post Office, which was donated to the Wicket Volunteer Fire Department in 1996, when the credit union moved to Monahans. The fire department built a new building on the site and is still using that building today. The WGOE Federal Credit Union's move to Monahans was to an empty convenience store at 1117 South Stockton. After much cleaning and remodeling, the WGE opened and expanded the services being offered to customers, such as checking and savings accounts, to go along with the loan service. This is the present site of Complex Community Federal Credit Union. In 2004, WGE merged with Complex Community Federal Credit Union, and Debbie became the senior loan officer. Quote, "The complex was a wonderful place to work. It is like family. The CEO and upper management are very considerate of their employees and always willing to help in any way possible when problems arise. Retiring is rather bittersweet. I love my job, but now I get to spend time doing things I love to do and be involved in. But the big plus is I get to spend more time with my family," she said. Debbie is a book lover and plans to read more, as well as become more active in the Lions Club. Quote, I will be able to go to the lunch meetings now, Debbie said. She said she is planning to help with Meals on Wheels and devote plenty of time to her church. Monahan's set to host First District Swim Meet since 2015. The story was written by Armando Flores. The last time Monahan's hosted a district meet was 9 years ago. The landscape and the teams vying to advance to regionals has also changed dramatically. In 2015, Monahan's competed under the umbrella of Class 5A and under teams. The meet, including Class 4A schools such as Andrews, Big Spring, Fort Stockton, Greenwood, Pecos, Seminole, along with Lubbock Estacado, and the swim factory known as Lubbock High. This time around, since the University Interscholastic League implemented a Class 4A and under level of competition, the District 2 4A meet will consist of host Monahans, Big Spring, Fort Stockton, Greenwood, Pecos, Seminole, and Stanton, vying for both the boys and girls team titles, along with the top spots in 24 events. The District 2 4A Swimming and Diving Championship will be held beginning Friday, January 19th at 12 noon for diving competition, and Saturday, January 20th, starting at noon, for the remaining swimming events. The event will be held at the new state-of-the-art Monahan's Aquatic Center on the campus of Monahan's High School. Monahan's has made a splash since last season on the swimming circuit and continues to put in the sometimes grueling work to achieve success. The Lobos and the Lady Lobos have showcased remarkable mental toughness in their quest to stand out from the rest of the district teams. The season has been a journey as the team exhibited resilience and determination to overcome training obstacles, some of which have been out of their control. Despite setting some of the best times of the season in many of the events, they know their hard work is not over and have to overcome the uncertainties of a highly competitive landscape against perennial power Pecos in order to move forward with their ultimate goals of getting to regionals in Andrews in 2 weeks and on to the state meet in San Antonio. An added pressure is showcasing their skills in their own house and the advantage of the home pool advantage, which will require them to show up and show out regardless of where their times have placed them at for the start of their quest. Head coach Jay Thomas said, quote, I am way past pumped to be hosting the first district meet in our new facility. There is only one time for the first time, and we will protect our house. We will get some bumps along the way, I am sure, but we will compete to the end. The top four finishes from each of the 24 events will earn a berth at the Class 4A Region 1 meet in Andrews. Pack the Monahan's Aquatic Center on Friday and Saturday to support the Monahan's High School swim team. Admission to both days of competition is free.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.